So today's daf is daf Mem Dalid, and we were in the middle of coming to understand Maimer of Shmuel. So Shmuel had said, we went back actually to try to look into it a bit more. Shmuel had said that if you have two shutafim, they can be made one for the other. And that led us to start thinking about the concept of negi'ut in Eidut. We have to explain away Shmuel's case, because normally you shouldn't be able to be made one shutaf to the other, because you're an interested party. You're Nogea Be'edutan. Anything that is going to establish the ownership of the other shutaf is ultimately going to actually make a difference to you, of course, as a shutaf, even if you resign all rights, you hand over all rights with a kinyan. We said there would still be a problem, because you remain an interested party for the reason that in the event that you might have a lien, which we don't have to know about, we're worried that you might have a lien, which already we will not accept you. How are we going to prove that you have a lien? So we can't accept your testimony, because if Lamaisa, it turns out that we accept your testimony, according to which this field was actually legally yours, now being in the other person's rishos, it's to your advantage to have that field so defined. Because if you owed money to anybody, he's going to come and he's going to collect it out of that field. Now, that's a great advantage to you, because otherwise he's going to collect it from you. Of course, we'd have to be talking about where there was no coming back to you for that money, so you have to specify that there was no achrayut, no guarantees. Okay, whatever the case is, all of those ideas became now fundamental to our thinking about negiut in Eidus. And today, we're going to continue the braita that raised this exactly these issues. Testimony, what is considered to be the relationship of a guarantee and liens, and the difference between a piece of real estate and a piece of chattel. And this, because of we had already introduced it, the Gemara gets into it here. We can't say that this is really the fundamental place to discuss it, but we were right in the middle of all of these issues, and the Gemara took advantage of that by discussing the braita. Now let's review once again the cases that we spoke about in the braita, because we're going to revisit them today from a totally different point of view. So I want to just look once again at that braita. Now, I won't go through the whole thing, but just the braita itself, which is on the third line of Mem Gimel Amud Beis, to review it, and then we'll speak outside what it is we've done so far and the Gemara's attack on our approach today. Tana Rabbanan. Machar lo bayit, machar lo sadeh. Somebody who sells a house or another piece of real estate, he cannot testify as to the ownership of the person to whom he sold it, because in the end he's an interested party, since if somebody would come along and take it away from him, he'd have to replace it because he's guaranteed it. Therefore, there's no way that he can get himself out of that achrayut. But if macharlo para, macharlo talit, on the other hand, if he sells him a cow or a piece of clothing, that's not a problem. There he can be made lo alav mipnei shein achrayut lo alav, because there is no achrayut on him. Now, the Gemara doesn't like this on it on the face of it, because there should not be a difference between a para and a piece of property. The difference is achrayut or non-achrayut. So that's all, just say so. Machar ba-achrayut, you cannot be made. Machar shelo ba-achrayut, you can be made. It's irrelevant. You can take achrayut on chattel as well, no? And you can sell a field of real estate without achrayut. So why make it dependent on what the item was? Just say the important part. And therefore, we came up with an extremely convoluted way of understanding the braita. According to Rav Sheshes, we haven't yet even finished the way in which he understands it. And what he said was that this braita is using the words achrayuto alav in a very different way than it's usually used. And what it's actually referring to is not the seller. We're not even talking about a seller. What we're talking about is someone who claims to have been robbed by the seller. So now Reuven has sold something to Levi, and Shimon is claiming that the something, the field that was sold by Reuven, was actually his. And what it's saying is that Reuven is not able to testify on behalf of Levi. Now, obviously, he can't literally testify on behalf of Levi, because then he's testifying against himself, so then he'd never be able to recover it, and then by definition, he wouldn't be an interested party. So what it means is he cannot testify against a third party's attack. Let's say a fellow named Yehuda comes along and says, look, this field was always mine. So now Shimon is certainly interested in testifying. No, it's not his, because I mean, he needs to recover it himself. So he wants to disqualify Yehuda's Edim, Raya's, whatever it is. But he's not believed to disqualify Yehuda's Raya's. Why? Because he may be interested in seeing to it that it remains in Levi's Rishus, so that it'll be easier for him to recover. Either because he thinks Levi is an easy pushover in court and Yehuda isn't, which we've seen. There's always a suspicion that we have, and that's enough of a reason for us to say he might be Nogea Be'edus for that reason. Or there might be really solid reasons, not just psychological ones, in that if the Beis Din will reward the field to Yehuda, his Raya's may not be able to stand up against Yehuda's Raya's. For instance, let's say that both he and Yehuda have witnesses that the field was theirs. They both have witnesses that they had purchased it from another party back in time. So now, if the Beis Din will reward the field to Yehuda against Levi, he's not going to be able to recover that field from Yehuda, because then it'll be Uki Trey La'adi Trey, but the same Raya's, same witnesses. We'll cancel the witnesses out, and we'll say status quo, but then status quo will be Yehuda. So it's very much in his interest to get change the status, to make sure that there's no change in status quo, to give it to Yehuda, which then is going to make it impossible for him to recover. Mashen Kane Levi doesn't have any rias other than the fact that Reuven sold it to him, but he can show that he's the owner, not Reuven. So he will be able to recover it from Levi. Okay, now that is where we got up to. According to that, the meaning of achrayuto alav has nothing to do with guarantees of sale. It has instead a completely different meaning of, since the ultimate dispensation of this field is going to be taken out on the buyer, not on the seller. So in other words, he, the owner, Shimon, has his sense of how he's going to recover his property is aimed at Levi. Now, therefore, he wants Levi to be in possession, because he's gunning for him, so to speak. So the acharit of achrayut, the bottom line of responsibility, that's sofo, is against Levi. And for him to therefore put it into Levi's rishus means that he's interested, and therefore he can't be a party to it. That's where we were up to. So it's a very strange way of defining the bright. Now notice that the central issue, which the Gemara was asking, what's the difference of the ratio, what's the difference of the seifa? Who cares if we're talking about chattel or we're talking about real estate? Hasn't even been addressed yet, right? We've just spoken about the first case that was talking about a field or a house. We didn't say why it would be any difference when it's coming to the chattel. So that obviously is what we have to discuss today. And in order to get to that point, we began with a question that leads to it. The Gemara is constructed very beautifully, very subtly. So the obvious question that we need to ask is, why did we create this weird case in which Reuven stole it from Shimon and then sold it to Levi, and now Shimon is going to testify for Levi? How did Levi get here? All we needed to do is talk about Reuven, the ganav, according to him. So he now wants to be mami the field in Reuven's hand against the third party, who will still call Yehuda in order not to get confused. So Yehuda now, he doesn't want Yehuda to have it because he wants to be able to recover it from the Goslin. Why does he have to recover it from a guy that the Goslin sold it to him? And that's just an unnecessary additional complication. Certainly the abstractions are exactly the same, with far less complications if we just leave Levi out of things. Therefore, asks the Gemara today, the very first words on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, V'lukma b'gazlan? Why not just say that it's talking about a case of the gazlan and not a case where the gazlan sold it to anybody else? Answers the Gemara, Mishum de kaboy lemitna seif. The problem over here is, you'll notice, we never talked about the last part, did we? Now, the last part specified machar lo para, machar lo talit. So over there it was talking about the sale of a para or a talit. And over there, if you don't talk about machar lo, you can forget it, because there will be no meaning to the Braita at all. The Braita was stuck with the case of Machalo. Why was it stuck? Because the real, and here's the way that we get to the explanation of what's the difference between real estate and chattel. Very simple. If we're talking about a case of Gizela, then real estate is always recoverable, because there's no way to have a Shinui Rishus on real estate by picking it up and walking away. So therefore, the original owner is always able to recover it. The problem is, though, that when you walk off with somebody else's chattel, such as his poro or his talit, if he was Miyaesh, he can still recover it. But if he was Miyaesh and you had sold it to somebody else, then you have both Yush and Shinui Rishus. And Yush and Shinui Rishus means that the buyer gets to keep your talit or your parah. Now, who cares? You could still get the money back, can't you? That the Gemara is going to ask. Let's assume for a moment that you wouldn't be able to get it back at all. Not its value, nor the actual chayfetz. So therefore, if you're talking about chattel and there was a mechira, so therefore we had a yush in the rishus of the ganev, and now a shinui rishus when the ganev sells it to somebody else, that explains precisely why now the nigzal, in this case we're calling him Shimon, is a disinterested witness. Because anyway, nothing's going to help him. He's not going to be able to recover it because of Yush Vashino Rishus. But when it comes to the case of the real estate, he will be able to recover it with Yush. There's no such thing as Yush Vashino Rishus on real estate because the shame of the Baalim is always known to be attached to the real estate. And there you get a beautiful explanation, says Rav Sheshes, of the difference in the Braita between selling a house or a field, in which case there is no way that he's ever going to be a disinterested party. Therefore, he cannot be Meir. And the second case where he's trying to recover his talit, where he's a disinterested party because of the fact that it's been sold. So since in that case, dafke mecher, the only way that the Braita could have presented the difference is in a case of a sale, because there you would have havela yi'ush v'shinei rishut. But in a case of a lo machar, if the ganav had never sold it, so then he would be able to recover it. The hadralei, it would go back to Shimon. So lo, he would not be able to testify because he would then be just as much as interested party as he would have been in a case of the karka. This is the only case that satisfactorily gives us an answer to the difference between karka and metaltelim. So because we spoke about the mechira and the seifa as that was no way that we could even talk anything if we hadn't spoken about a case of machar. So, okay, in order not to confuse things, we talk about machar in the reisha. Not that machar was really important, because it doesn't add anything, but ton of reisha, I mean machar, in other words, look, keeping everything else the same. You have to figure out, when you see this braita, says Rav Sheshes. That's why it's brilliantly constructed, because it's meant to force you to think out the case. So when I give you a case in which all things are the same, the mechira is the same, the interest is the same, and yet I tell you there's a difference between karka and metaltelin. Now that's a heck of a puzzle, okay? Go work it out. And you'll see that I'm right. There's only one explanation. That it's trying to fool you into using the words achrayut, alav, in this confusing way, so that you'll be able to now think, what? No way that there would be an afkamina in terms of straight out mechira. It would only be mechira in the case of initial gezela. Ah, brilliant. So that's the afkamina between the metaltelin and the karka. That's my solution, says Rav Sheshes. Says Gemara, now wait a minute. But it still it doesn't work out all that well. You're saying he can't recover it because it's Yush Vashinui Rishus. Okay, but he can recover the money. I mean, isn't that important for him? Fine, he won't be able to get the talit back. But how can you say he's a disinterested witness? If he's able to disprove the Taina of Yehuda, this was my talit, and he can show that it's his talit, so then he's going to be able to get his money back for the talit from the Goslin. Mashenkin, if the court's going to say this was always Yehuda's talit, how's he ever going to get his money back? So I don't understand. I mean, Yush and Shinui Rishus is irrelevant. Because the only thing that Yush and Shinui Rishus does is it allows you to demand payment instead of return. But it certainly doesn't magically take away your rights to recover the value of your stolen goods. So I don't understand. Who cares if he was machar? So says the Gemara, I mean, it's all very nice. Neither me, Aish, me, Gufe. There's Yush from being able to recover. But I mean, certainly the value remains his. Me, Dami, me, Aish. I mean, that Yush, what it really means, doesn't affect the Dumim. Ah, well, you see, we're talking about in a case where the Goslin died in between. Oh boy, this case is getting more and more complicated all the time. So if the Goslin died, now I'm going to have to recover it from his children. But you see, I can't recover value from his children because they don't have a mitzvah of hashava because they never stole it. So if the thing would still be around and then they would have it, maybe, we're going to talk about that. If the thing were still around, perhaps I could recover it. But now, if Bezdin would give it to somebody else, I'll never be able to recover it. I said, you'll be able to recover it from his heirs. No, his heirs, you can't recover the value of a thing because they don't know you the value. You say, well, it's none of our business where dad got his money. I mean, yes, you know, good old dad Bernie, you know, but the fact is we got lots of dough. So, okay, wherever it came from. But the point is that we don't have to take responsibility for what he did. Yehuda says it's his. He has rayas that it's his. What's that? Fine. But Yehuda is claiming it was stolen from him, not from the other guy. If Yehuda proves that it's his, well, maybe he's tainitz now. He may say that this whole thing wasn't true. It was taken directly from him. So it's not, it's currently his. So now, if that's the case, and we have to prove that if the Gozlan dies, let's first note that the Mishnah says Beferish, that in a case that's not Gozilu Machilat Banak, somebody steals something, and he uses it to provide for his family. He niach lifnehem. And now, that money now is left to them as a bequest after he dies. They are peturim eleshaleh. They don't have to pay it back. Of course. Yeah, but the kvodavim is only when the object would be returned. But over here, we're not returning the object. If he borrowed it, borrowed what? If the father leaves them borrowed money, they also don't have to return it unless there's a lien on something, right? Okay, but if there's no, he didn't leave them any property, so then we're not going to be gaiva from them. Now, the question is that now you've thrown a real monkey wrench into this whole mishigas, because by making the case so complicated, you've again raised the issue. So now, why do I have to sell it? If we need yirsh and shinoi rishus, then the fact that the guy died and it's now in the rishus of his yorshim already would give us yirsh and shinoi rishus. So if there's no way to avoid the guy dying, because if he didn't die, you'd anyway be able to recover the money, and therefore again there won't be enough kamina between metaltalim and karka, right? Okay, so then if you need to introduce his death and his heirs, you might as well leave it at that. What do you have to have the mechira for? I mean, now it's a worse unnecessary complication. Because now I already have a yirsh and shinui rishus. Asks the Gemara, so then look with a yorish. Then you don't need a mocher. You just need a yorish. Now, if you hold like the Mandi Omar, who says that a heir is considered to be an extension of the initial estate, then it's not shinui rishus. So then it would work out, right? Which is another machlokas. Is an heir considered to be a new rishut? Or is an heir considered to be standing in his father's shoes, and no change has actually taken place? If indeed you would hold that a yoresh is not considered to be the equivalent of a purchase, because it's the continuation of the father, I understand now I have to get so many complications. Just think how many issues are going on over here, and look how many different people we're dealing with. You know, we're dealing with the original owner, Shimon, ostensibly. Reuven, who now sells it to Levi, comes along Yehuda, but meanwhile, Reuven has died, and we're dealing with Reuven's heirs. This is an unbelievable case. So I have no way of avoiding that complication, because the heirs alone would not sufficiently provide a shinui rishus to go along with the yush, and therefore again there would be no nafkamina between karkos and metaltalin. But suppose you hold elalaman yom rishut yoresh ki rishut lokeach dami, that an heir is the equivalent of a purchase. So how would you be able now to explain the nature of the braita with machar? Since you yourself said, yeah, but of course it has to be talking about if he died. So if he died, then why again does it say Mocha? So the Michael Amema. Furthermore, says Abaya, look, you know, you guys are getting involved in the details. So you haven't dealt with the fundamental problem. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. You know, you let it slip by the words Achrayuto Alav, which are an absurd use of the word Achrayuto Alav. I don't care how many ways of simplifying Rav Sheshet's case you're going to come up with. The bottom line is the words don't mean what he's claiming they mean. Mipnei she'achrayuto alav, according to him, means against the buyer. Now, you know perfectly well that all over Shas, achrayut means achrayut to the buyer, not achrayut against the buyer. It's one thing to use a borrowed term, but to use a borrowed term to mean the exact opposite of what it means, it's just not possible to accept that. What's this b'deish achrayuto alav? Or b'deish ein achrayuto alav? I mean, why say it in such a crazy way? You're trying to say a very simple thing, Rav Sheshet. All you're trying to say is, the nafkamina is whether you'll be able to get it back or you won't be able to get it back. That has something to do with achrayut. Just say, b'deish chozeret lo, or b'deish ein achozeret lo. It's not very simple. So if you're talking about metatlim, mipnei she'eno chozeret lo. If you're talking about karka, mipnei she'chozeret lo. I mean, you're using a word that is, first of all, it's unnecessary, because it's irrelevant that there's achrayut. What's important over here is it recoverable? If it's recoverable, then there's interest. If it's not recoverable, then he's a disinterested party. And then, say so. But besides, it's even in the wrong language. So that's what me boiling. That's what it should have said. Therefore, throw it out, as far as I'm concerned, throw out this whole approach to Rav Sheshet. It's absurdly complicated. It uses the language wrong. And let's strip things down to essentials to mean exactly what they always mean, and I'll show you how simple it is. Couldn't be easier. I mean, you've already discussed, really, the issue that you should have stopped at and noted that that's the explanation. You talked about Ravin Bar Shmuel's din, right? About being Ma'amida Bifnei Bal Chovo. So now I want to show you how simple it is to explain the difference in the Braita between Mitaltalim and Karka, simply because of the question of whether liens are creatable against chattel. That's the issue. Very simple. That's what Achrayut means. It's all going according to the point that Ravin Bar Shmuel brought out yesterday. Remember the Omer Ravin Bar Shmuel B'Shmeid Shmuel. HaMocher Sadeh L'Chaviro Shelo Ba'Achrayut. So even though you've not accepted any responsibility against third parties, Ein Me'id Lo Alav, you cannot, in a case where somebody else is claiming that this is his property and not the person to whom you sold it, you cannot go ahead and testify that he is the one that should be in this field. Why? Because by doing so, you make the field recoverable by someone to whom you owed money for a previous loan 10 years before. If somebody succeeds in proving that this field was his and not yours, so then the person who's holding the loan against you is going to come directly to you. But if you can show that this is the person to whom you sold it, then he can't come anymore to you. He's got to go and collect it from the lien. So he'll take the field. And now you'll waive, and everybody's going to be happy. Except the poor guy who bought it. But that's not your business. It's Shelo Ba'Achrayut anyway. So the point over there is obviously that you're exceedingly interested. So then, Ein Me'id Lo Alav, Mipnei Shemamida, Bifnei Bal Chovo. And what the Braita is coming to say is, now, where do we have that chashash? Only where there would be a lien that was collectible against the item that you're coming to be made at. Aha! Then that means that the item has to be real estate. And that's why it's distinguishing between real estate and metaltaling. Because dafka bayit o sadeh. But if somebody sells a para or a talit, there, lomi boy bestoma de lo mishtabla. Forget about if you don't say anything. You don't say to the guy now, who you're selling it to. So now you didn't say, to the Balchov that you borrowed from, that you see this para, if I don't pay you, come collect from the para. That wouldn't help at all. Even that wouldn't. I mean, if you didn't say that, for sure, I mean, it's not discussed. They're lo mishabda. We certainly don't say that normally. When a person makes a loan, he's making it against the shirt on your back. Yes, it's true. It says in the document you can recover even the shirt off my back. But nobody lends money to recover the loan from the shirt off your back. They lend money because you have a field to collect against, which is why the principal, for instance, was only instituted for normal loans, where a guy has something you could put a lien on. So if you didn't mention that you want to make a lien on his cow, so then obviously there's going to be a difference between real estate, which is sold with achrayut, and cows. So, and that's the reason, because a cow anyway, nobody's going to be able to take from you. So, because there's no lien against the cow. Now, obviously, that's not precisely what we need to deal with over here. We're not worried about the lien so much as the problem of whether the guy's going to be able to demand his money back from you. You'll notice that this has been an assumption all along, which is sort of a weird assumption. That as long as we only need to worry about somebody coming and recovering the thing that he took, and so if you don't have to worry about that, you don't have to worry about a thing. What? I sell a guy something that doesn't belong to me, and I don't have to worry about a thing. I mean, he's obviously going to sue me and say, this guy sold something that didn't belong to me. So of course I need to prove that it belongs to me. Forget about that problem for a moment. Let's only discuss the lien problem. We'll get in an incident a little bit later to, what do you mean? What about the issue of my having to refund the money that he paid me for a cow that wasn't mine? We'll think about that later. But here we're only worried about, am I being ma'amid the cow bifnei bal chovo? Only if bal chovo can collect from a cow. So if it's bistoma, where I'd never told him he could collect from the cow, so then of course he cannot collect from a cow. But the thing is, and why is that, my taima? Because it's metatalinino. The din is liens are not created against chattel. Even if you write, afagav de katav lemi glima de al katve, even if you would write in the normal shtar now, and you can collect from the shirt off my back, which is the way that we usually write such a shtar, hanimili de itnu beinayu. This would only be in a case where it's actually there, avo letnu be'inayu, lo, this is certainly not recoverable. In a case where there's nothing that's there, meaning it was already sold to somebody else, you can come and collect off the shirt off my back. But you can't collect the shirt off my back that is no longer on my back. I sold it to somebody. That requires a lien. There's no lien. Because obviously, no buyer would then be able to buy metaltolin because there would be no way for me to establish whether there was a lien on anything. That's all that we need. Mishlei, when we are talking about karkas, we say we have title clearance, we have a call of Mathiras karka, and therefore we're protecting the buyers. That was our whole issue. There'd be no way to protect anybody from anything if somebody could come along with a lien on somebody's used lawnmower. I mean, that's crazy. So therefore, we can't allow liens under those circumstances. Even though a person is saying, you can collect from me, yes, if it's still in my house, come and collect it. But that's not the same as a lien that you could take off of somebody else. But I want to tell you something. I want to tell you that the difference that the Braita is making is even if you make it a hypotek. So even if you turn it into an apoteki, which is actually, as we mentioned many times, apoteki is really a Greek word, which is really an English word. It's still used. Hypotek is used based on the apoteki of the Greeks. But Chazal often use words that are Greek by giving them a sort of popular etymology so that you could see what they mean in Hebrew or in Aramaic. And an apoteki means apotehekoyich. This shall be obtained against this. Apotehekoy, which is what it means in Greek also. It's the pledge is what it means. So over there, where you create a specific mortgage on the lawnmower, or a specific mortgage over there, like a mechanic's lien, or you have a specific mortgage against the cow. So you'd say, so over there, I mean, doesn't that do the same thing that a specific lien does? I understand that if you say in general, you can collect from anything that I have, that it means only the things that I have. But if you say you can collect this loan from this cow and only this cow, so isn't that good enough? No, it's not. Afilo asapotik enamilo. And the reason for that is that even an apoteki does not generate a kol that is protectable against by a buyer if it's dealing with metaltolim, because metaltolim is sort of generic to the exact opposite of real estate. Real estate is specific to space. It's this and easily discernible as being different from anything else. Metaltolim are always generic. My talit, my para, and so on and so forth. What is that supposed to be? Your talit, your para. So over there, it's Kidarava, Diomarava. If asa avdo apotiki umocharo, if you make an eved, who has a din of karka apotiki, an eved is not generic. An eved is easily definable, and everybody knows this is so-and-so the eved of. And this is how the eved will sign, so-and-so eved to so-and-so, so that he's as unique as anybody else. If he sells him, so then a balchov can be gova mimenu, even from the purchaser of the eved. But if it's shorov chamoro apotik, if you turn it, you make a hypotek against the shor and a chamor and sell it, ein balchov gove amenu. Why? Very simple. My time, a high eat le kala, a high let le kala. There is no way to attach a rumor to something that's a generic entity. How are people going to identify the fact that this is, I mean, it's, I have no way of asking. And therefore, there's no way for me to do due diligence of liens against a cow. And because of that, we were mevatel your ability to collect it from a buyer, because otherwise no one will buy. And all of this was part of our buyer protection program to allow Shvakim to exist, as we've seen many times. So we gave the proper definitions of liens in a way that aid and abet commerce, as opposed to the opposite. Obviously, we need to balance the potential for loans against the damage of liens. But that's what we did. So this is how we came out with this, says Rava, something that has a call. Liens, no call, no liens. And that is exactly why the simplest explanation, says Abaya, the Braita makes a difference between real estate, where there could be a lien. It's just there could be a lien. We suspect you of wanting to testify that this guy owns it, even though you claim to be a disinterested party. How do we know that 10 years down the road, somebody's not going to come and show up with a lien against that field and save you $100,000 because he takes the field that you, 10 years ago, to our naive ears, thought a disinterested party was saying, no, this really belongs to him, I sold it to him. Now it turns out that you were not disinterested in the least. Masha'inkein, if what you're testifying that you sold was a cow, So then you're right. There's nothing that could change, because even if a guy does show up 10 years later with a lien, he's not going to be able to execute it against the cow. So that explains the whole business in the simplest way possible. Achrayut means what it always means. Machar means what it always means. There's just the buyer and the seller, and that's it. Not 15 people that are involved in a sale and somebody dies. And my God, I can't believe he came up with a case like that. That I can't contest it, but it doesn't help you against somebody else. If you come in waving an apotica, you walk out with it. But it gives you a certain amount of security, assuming that I'm not smart enough to sell it. As long as he doesn't sell, as long as it's ita be'inayo. Ita be'inayo here is used in the sense of in his reshus be'inayo, not that it exists somewhere on earth. Says the Gemara, now wait a minute. There is a case you have not covered. Because the truth is, it is possible to create an apotheke type of lien on metaltolin in one way that you haven't thought of. And that is this. We know, Reb Barnea, we know that there exists kinyonim in which metaltolin are treated agav karka. Right? So, for instance, you could be kine karka, and agav that karka, any metaltolin that you want to be part of the transaction. The point is, however, that you can also create liens agav karka. So when something now was given on the basis of a guarantee against a field and all the implements in the field, the marshal, the para in the field, the lawnmower, and it doesn't even have to be in the field. I'm just saying that would be a very easy case. Go take it against my field and everything there. So then that would create an apotheke because of the cold generated by the karka that would warn you off against buying this guy's metaltolin. And because of that, because look, Leichus says, why aren't we afraid? Remember, we don't have to know any of this. We just need to know that there's a possibility that he's not disinterested, and we won't be able to accept his testimony. So, Leichus, Dima Aktele Metaltoli Agav Mekakoi, why can't it be that he was makna to him a lien Agav Karka, the Omar Rabba, the Aktele Metaltoli Agav Mekakoi, Koni mekarkoi v'koni metaltele. Rava says that in a case where indeed you do give him rights of collection together with the collection against your soda, then the apotheke would actually be created as a lien against your metaltele. Any lien would be created. Now you didn't mention that problem. No, then it would be collectible even from the buyer. The Omer of Chista says of Chista, but this is only, now wait a minute, this is only, v'hu de katavle, if you wrote in the document, deloke esmachta, v'deloke tuvse deshtare. Why? Now this, the truth is, we always write that. There's a question, and the Rishonim Tosus over here says also, I'm not sure. But this is just standard language, or it's specific language to this case, the part about Tufse Deshtara. Tufse Deshtara is really irrelevant here. Tufse Deshtara simply means that every contract needs to be stated, this is a contract, not a dugma. That's all that it means. So in other words, this was written not for people to copy and then to fill in the blanks. This is a contract. It's not a Tufse Deshtara. Tufse Deshtara means a blank contract that people can be used now as a tofes, meaning a way in which they're going to copy. Fine, but the important part is the lokes machta. Because the deeper issue here is that when a person makes a loan, he is really relying on the lien that's on the karka. And therefore, if you execute at the same time, even a koshikein, if it isn't together with karka, and all you give him is the other type of lien against metaltolin, he's thinking to himself, yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, if I were crazy, I would rely on this. You know, maybe in some weird situation, I'll be able to trace his pora, you know. But that's an esmachta, because there's never really any thought that this is going to happen. Because what I'm really relying on is your karka. Otherwise, I wouldn't be making this loan. I'm not a friar. So therefore, if you make it very clear that, look, I have designs against this para, I don't really trust the field to be able to cover it, for whatever reason. So then if you write the lokes machta, then you'd be able to utilize a kinyan of a lien on karka, on metaltolin, agav mikarkoi, I understand that this is a very complicated case, says Rav Chisda, but that's not the point. The complication is not the issue. The issue is, do you need to worry that such an event could have happened? Yes, it could have happened. Since you can't use a witness unless you know him to be disinterested, well, you don't know him to be disinterested. This is a pretty serious possibility. So you're saying it's only a 1% of cases, a 0.5% of cases. No. So you're going to accept a witness because, why worry? What do you mean, why worry? You're using a witness to take something away from somebody. You have to know he's not an interested party. Therefore, you haven't covered all of your bases, Tainas Rav Chisda to Abaya, which makes your whole approach against Rav Sheshes untenable. No, we don't let him into court in the first place. Because we're not going to trust what he says. How can he come along and say something about his own suitability to be a witness? That's a contradiction. Right.
But it's not a witness who is not, we don't know anything.
No, we have no reason. In other words, if we have reason that there's any possibility of interest, he doesn't walk in. If not, there's nothing to ask him. We're not going to ask his better nature. It has to be a legal testimony, says the Gemara. Well, we'll have to add, unfortunately, I thought he had this all locked up with, like, simplicity, you know? Turns out it's not, that's not really all that simple, because we're going to have to add, we're going to have to add a little caveat over here, that the case was that what happened is that Achma Eskina Kigon Shalakachu Machar La'alta. This was a buy-sell deal on the spot. So in other words, there wasn't even enough time for him to take a loan. It was done in front of us. Somebody goes ahead now, buys the para, buys the talit, and then sells it to somebody else. So we know that in the interim, he couldn't possibly have taken out a loan. Therefore, he is truly disinterested. Says the one, wait a minute. How about if you take out a loan and you agree to accept liens on anything that you will buy? So then you'd never know that there was enough time or not enough time, because you could have taken a loan out at some other time, maybe years before. So, v'leichesh dilba de'ikne, why don't we have to be chayesh that before I ever bought the talit, I had borrowed money, and I had created this type of agav metaltalin, but I used the future language, and anything that I shall buy. So then, people are still alerted because of the shibud on the metaltalin to, this guy has outstanding loans, don't deal with him. Because at the time that he sold his property, he gave his whole life away. Don't buy anything from that guy. So then, maybe, how do we know that it wasn't sold under those circumstances? It was a pre-existing ikni. And now he's coming to be made because he, once again, is an interested party. If I could show that it's not Yehuda's pora, so then the guy that I borrowed money from 5 years ago is going to be able to collect the pora directly. So how can he be made? Well, shmamina. So in other words, what you see from here, are you ready to conclude that if somebody says, the ikni, that in the event that he was kono umachar, that he went ahead right away, and he sold right away, or he was kona, and then he died right away. Very inconvenient. The horish, that ikni won't help, and it will not be mishubad, lo mishtabd. I mean, is that what you're saying? Because I don't see how else you're going to explain the case as being disinterested. Well, no, we can always add another little kvetch, says Abaya. Once we're kvetching, it's talking about a case that he's bought and sold instantly, that it could be that the witnesses that are testifying to the sale, they say that we know, Yadina Bebahaydo Havile Arami Olam, this guy never owned any real estate. So since he never owned any real estate, he couldn't possibly have created a lien agav real estate by putting a lien on the metaflim at the same time they did on the sonar, because he never owned real estate. Actually, the Rishonim discuss, how can you bring a raya that not, you know? Right. You can't really bring a raya that not. I mean, so basically, I mean, the idea over here is that when Edim are saying that we never heard of such a thing, that is sufficient to establish just that we don't have to be chayish anymore that he had done it. As the Edim themselves to the sale, they themselves are saying there couldn't have been anything that anybody knew about. Ask the Gemara. Okay, all right, now we'll accept your pshat. I mean, accept that everybody's ignoring the most basic problem of all. If you sold something that isn't yours, don't you have to pay for it? Back to the guy. I mean, you're talking about achrayas with liens and this and that. I mean, but if you sell somebody the Brooklyn Bridge, you're going to tell him, well, I didn't give you any guarantees. Oh, you didn't give me any guarantees, but you certainly made it clear that you own the Brooklyn Bridge. You're selling me the part. You're saying, I didn't give you any guarantee on the part. You don't need to give me guarantee. I mean, you can't go straight out and steal my money by stealing somebody from somebody else, claiming it's yours and selling it to me. So I'm always going to be an interested party. Why are we worried about liens that are coming from elsewhere? If it turns out that somebody else owned the field or owned the part, it should be exactly the same problem. I am going to have to refund the money. How come nobody's talking about that? How come we're talking about all these esoteric liens and apotekis and all? What about just straight out fraud? Don't you have to pay for fraud? How did you get away with that? Says the Gemara, but what about Rav Papa's? Such a clear statement. Omer Rav Papa. Look, I mean, the Rabbanim might have said, if you sell without any guarantees, and now a Balchov to whom you had given a lien on the field comes along, Vitarfani, takes it away from under the guy. He can't come back to you for his money back. But nonetheless, obviously, if it turns out that you never owned the field, of course he can come back and get his money back. So why have we been avoiding the most significant part of the problem over here, which is that no matter how you cut it, whether it's a para or whether it's a field, fraud is recoverable. So that makes you an interested party. You want to make it very clear that there was no fraud. Sheesh. Says the Gemara, well, the truth is, all of the assumptions that we've made all along, and we pointed this out yesterday for another reason, Shlotei Alef Tar Omet, the Gemara's didn't even mention about the fact that you don't want to be seen as fraudulent, or that itself would be enough reason. The case over here, therefore, has to be talking about, it's got to be talking about a case that the buyer himself knew that it belonged to you. And therefore, he's not going to come back. And it's got to be talking about, of course, that somehow he was made under other circumstances that he knew that it was there before this happened. Because if he only says it after it happened, then he might just be trying to get you to be a disinterested witness so that your testimony would then be good for him. So that's not going to work, because then we'll have the supposedly disinterest in the disinterest, which actually was an interest in somebody who was interested. So, but if, under other circumstances, the guy had let on and had been made up, that he knows that he can't come back with any taina for fraud because he is aware of the fact that this was this person's field or this person's para, then he can never go back to recover it. Now the shaila only revolves around liens that he didn't know about. That's something else. So there it depends if there is achrayut or not achrayut. Depends on metaltelin, depends on and so on karka, and then all of the issues that Abaye raised indeed start coming into play. But of course, there was nothing to discuss if there was the issue of fraud. We're talking about where fraud is not on the table. So now it's just a shaila whether there is something, either because of the complexities of Reb Sheshes' situation, or because of the relative simplicity of a bias situation, which the case itself is simple. It's just that we need to have a lot of side issues handled, which is that we need to know that there weren't apotekis created. I mean, that's a lot less problematic than Reb Sheshes is twisting the words of the meaning of the word of achrayut and the meaning of the word of machar and the meaning of who it is that was being toveya. I mean, that's really crazy. That's changing the actual case, not saying, well, it'll only be in this ukimta and that ukimta, which we're always ready to take an ukimta to illustrate a point, but not to complicate a case in a way that it is not what you spoke. Rav Zvid, however, says that there's bechlal no problem over here because you don't have to get into where the guy knows. Afilo nimtze che'ena shelo. Even if it turns out that it was fraud, he still can't get his money back. Because the seller could say, look, I made it very clear to you. You're buying this as is. I make no representations of any kind. There are no guarantees. Now you're ready to buy or not. I'm giving you a great deal. Buyer beware. But that's your choice. So since he buys under those circumstances, the guy could say, well, that's why I made all of those protestations about no guarantees, you know. You should have gotten suspicious yourself, shouldn't you? That's exactly why I sold it without taking any responsibility. V'lukma begaza, mishum the gaboilim is the sefer machar lo para machar lo talit, which of course is dafka machar, but only over there it's yush v'shinui reshut. Avalo machar, where it would be adrale, lo, tana reshanami machar. Hey, wait a minute. Sefer nami need to be yayish begufe, but what about the money? Midame mi miyayish? Lo tzricha the mit gazlan, the tana gozelo machilu benavi niach lefneim p'turim l'shalem. So then why do we need machar? V'lukma b'yoresh. Ah, z'ayini chalaman yom reshut yoresh after reshut lokeach. I mean, I know why I need machar, because I need a lokeach. But laman yom reshut yoresh is anyway k'reshut lokeach, then the machar creates a lokeach who's unnecessary, because we have the yoresh. So Michael Amema, not to mention that the whole thing doesn't make any sense according to Abaye. Kashile le'abaye, what's this mipesh achrayuto alav jazz, or this ein achrayuto alav jazz? It should simply say that you chozeret l'vena chozeret l'biboyle. El a whole different approach to simplify. Get a ravin bar Shmuel. The Amar ravin bar Shmuel shmei Shmuel. Hamocher sadele chaveru shelo b'achrayut in meid lo alaya. Mipnei shemamida b'fnei ba'al chovo. Comes along the brayta to clarify that that's dafka machar bayit osadeh avaparav talit lo miboy. If he didn't say that I want to be mishabed at mistom, of course it's not mishabed. Because my time in Metatilin, you know, and normally Metatilin about Chovla Mishtabne. And that would be true, I forgot the Katev, like Miglima Dal Katve. There, it's true, it is Miglima Dal Katve, as long as it's in my Rishus. Animiladit nu beinayu, avolet nu beinayu lo. Ela filu asa o apotikinami lo. My time to get a Rava, the Omar Rava. Asa avdo apotiki umacharo, yes. There about Chov Gove Emenu. But Sharova Kamora Potikeo Machro Ain Balkov Govem and my time hi eat like kala vai let like kala. Velekish Dima Aktilin Metaltaliaga Makakoya, which case you would be able to create an apotikeo metaltalin. Dioma Rabbi Aktilin Metaltaliaga Mikakoy Konamikakoy Konamitaltale. Viom Rav Chista, of course this is only if it costs of the locus machta vidalokatuf sidishtora. There wasn't even enough time to create a lien. Yeah, so then Walekos Dilma, he went into a de'iknehu, unquote. Moshmamina, de'ikne kana, are you ready to say this? That if his ikne was kana mochar, and or kana vahorish, he wouldn't be mishtabit even though he said ikne? Not necessarily. Lo tzrich, d'emrir, yadina b'dai, d'la avi le'karami oilam. The Omer of Papa, what about the underlying issue of fraud? That Afaka Vimra Rabbanu Mocha said to the Chaver Shlobach Rayut, Ubaba al Chovo, Vitarfai Menu, Eno Chozer Alab. But, I mean, if it was certainly Nimtzi Jenna Shlob at all, so then it was straight out fraud, then it can be Chozer Alab. Okba Mayaskinan, Bimakirba, Shehibat Chamoro. Oh, yeah, I forgot to continue. Verv Zvid Omar, Afila Nimtzi Jenna Shlob, Eno Chozer Alab. The Omer Leilaki Zvinilacha Shlob Achrayut.